This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We take you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight in the studio, hello Paul.
Hello.
Dean's here.
G'day, Matt.
Damien as well.
Hi.
And myself, Matt. As you heard there in the news today in the Bangladesh capital, the editor of the country's only LGBT magazine was brutally murdered in his home along with another man. Zulhas Manan was a trailblazer for the LGBT community in the Islamic-dominated Bangladesh. Not only did he start the magazine with a small band of supporters, he was also behind their annual Rainbow Rally. He was openly gay in a country that does not accept gay people. He published a magazine that aimed to spread tolerance. The results of that we will only know in time. We spoke to one of the editors behind the Root Barn magazine when it launched in 2014, and their words are now quite confronting.
We came to know that several blogs and Facebook pages, they are demanding our death penalty, and all they are demanding our death. And several extremist outfits are probably active behind this, and we are very worried about our safety outside our home. My social life has been totally devastated. Suddenly, all friends came to know about my identity. And I don't know what will happen if any one of them leak my photo over internet and saying them that this is the editor of Root Barn and kill him and all that thing, you know?
To help us dissect this senseless violence and find out what it means for the gay community in Bangladesh, tonight we speak to Douglas Pretzel from Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
In other news around the world, the Catholic Church in Norway is going to stop performing civil weddings altogether to make their stand against equal marriage. They've taken a bid to distance themselves from other churches in Norway, and they're now going to ask the Vatican for permission to stop performing all civil weddings. The Bishop of Oslo has made this announcement.
So this is following last week where we were talking about the Lutheran Church voted in favour of allowing same-sex marriage in Norway, and they've gone to the other extreme.
He said it is to make it clear and distinguish their church from other churches. So it's exactly that reason.
To make it clear that they're different to the rest of the world.
Yes.
Well, not quite the rest of the world, I guess. There is some claims that politicians may now get aggressive towards churches who resist these weddings, but they insist that that is the best option to stop conducting marriages on the state's behalf.
Meanwhile, the Church of Norway is expected to approve a motion that will allow same-sex couples to marry in their churches. The Church last discussed it in 2014, where the proposal was rejected, but there's now a new governing body, so they're expecting that the majority are actually in favour. Same-sex marriage became legal in Norway in 2009, and the Church of Norway has also allowed the ordination of gay clergy before then.
Well, moving on to some much more positive news in Singapore, a record number of corporations have confirmed their support for Singapore's biggest LGBTI rally, Pink Dot, which is set to be held on 4th of June this year. Up from 9 sponsors that the event had in 2015, this year's event, the number has doubled, and we'll see a total of 18 corporations making a stand on LGBTI issues in the country. Names, sweetie, names.
Who's there?
Long-time sponsors such as Google, Barclays, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs and BP are returning, and other new sponsors who have stepped in this year include Facebook, Apple, General Electric, NBC, Universal, Visa and Microsoft.
That's the big hitters, aren't they?
That's good news, but I don't see any local sponsors.
No.
Ah, well, I'll have to correct you there, Paul.
Oh.
So, besides the international names, the event will also see the support of new local sponsors in a bid to reach out to more Singaporeans and permanent residents of the country. These include media companies, law firms, and a local cafe chain, and the latter two new types of businesses to indicate their support for the event.
I stand corrected.
This is really quite outstanding because we have seen in a number of countries within Asia where the multinationals are the ones who, I guess, start the process of bringing in more liberal views, and then the locals starts to drive change. So to see some of those locals coming in, that's fantastic.
Well, Singapore is driven by nothing if not money. So it's important to remember that homosexuality is still illegal in Singapore, and Pink Dot has been held annually, and this year will be the eighth time. And it drew more than 28,000 supporters to its event in 2015, which is impressive for a country with a very small population. Set against a backdrop consisting of harsh censorship laws prohibiting accurate or positive portrayals of LGBTIs in mainstream media. And, of course, this law was inherited from the damn British colonial rulers.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I should just apologise at the beginning That's of right. each programme, basically.
So, in the past, they've lit up the park with pink torchlights. This year will be a little bit different. They're going to play a more active role in declaring their support for the freedom to love, and they'll be writing their own messages onto placards, which will all be raised together at the end of the event in a united statement for inclusivity.
Across to Malaysia now, where one of Malaysia's top police officials has said that LGBT culture cannot be accepted in the country.
Why is that?
And for this reason, that openly LGBT people should not be employed in the police force.
I think we look great in uniforms.
some better than others. Yeah.
Nur Rashid was responding to a question from the media on whether the police force in Malaysia would change in line with the changing times and the growing acceptance of LGBT people. Here's what he said. Till today, the LGBT culture is not accepted in this country, so based on that principle, we still maintain the current quota for men and women. So we're not men or women? I'm not quite sure how to interpret that.
We must be a third one.
The third one. The remarks were followed by an editorial in the Malay Daily, in which editors said they agreed with the police decision to refuse LGBT recruits, claiming that religious principles and traditional values remain central in the country.
But there is a challenge, according to the editorial. And I quote, "It is difficult to detect the characteristics of some of the LGBT candidates during interview sessions and the probation period, as well as in tough training."
I just need that list from Brunei.
In brief, in Israel, a man who killed a participant in Jerusalem's Pride Parade last year has been convicted of murder, 6 counts of attempted murder and 1 count of causing extreme bodily harm.
Trans people in New Zealand seeking to have gender reassignment surgery have been told they face a 30-year wait after the only specialist surgeon in the country has retired.
And in Hong Kong, the largest LGBTI rights group has appealed to the UN Committee Against Torture next week over the government's position on recognition of trans people. And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Ryan Reed from the International Gay Rodeo Association, saddling up with Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, and that was Prince with I Wish You Heaven. And that was actually requested by one of our listeners.
Yes, that's right. Pete messaged us earlier on today, basically as a result of the Bangladesh show tonight, and had another message in that regard from 317. It is indeed with a heavy heart that we mourn people that have dedicated their whole careers to social justice and human rights. In lieu of Prince's death as well, there was a special album called The Rainbow Children that was all about inclusivity, peace and harmony, common themes in human rights for gay individuals. Rest in peace to the artists that promote us to think outside the square. And Pete's message, in lieu of Prince's death, we take for granted individuals whose careers have a humanitarian lead in gender equality. They all have spiritual compass for inclusion, respect and universal love. Rest in peace. Only the good die young. Thanks for those messages. They are coming in as a result of the murder of a leading activist in Bangladesh just last night. Now, the story we have out of Bangladesh, it happened at the home of the editor of Bangladesh's first LGBT magazine, where the editor, Manan, and his friend were hacked to death in the capital. Apparently, five or six young men posing as couriers arrived at his building under the guise of delivering a package. They entered and then attacked the two. It is believed that Manan's mother and a maid were also in the flat at the time. They were unaffected. There were other injuries in the attack as well. The other man has been named as Tanay Mujumdar. These were very brutal killings. They come off a series of other attacks that have been occurring against more progressive people in Bangladesh. The most recent one was a university professor who was also hacked to death. The Root Barn team has been receiving threats from various Islamist pages on Facebook for some time, according to the Boys of Bangladesh, which is the country's largest gay rights movement. Manan, who is from Root Barn, has also had quite a large profile within Bangladesh as well.
And the killings come a day after Bangladeshi police detained a university student in the hacking death of 58-year-old Rizal Karim Sadiq, who was an English teacher at Rajshahi University. Professor Sadiq taught English. He was waiting for a bus to take him to campus on Saturday when he was attacked from behind and stabbed in the neck. And it's unclear whether the attack was related to the recent hacking deaths of bloggers in Bangladesh.
Now, when the magazine was first launched in Bangladesh in 2014, we spoke to the organisers. They were actually expecting a low-key start when a local website published the name of the editor, and the international media, with its excitement about the story, spread that name quite widely. In an Islamic country where homosexuality is illegal and there are many reports of homophobic violence, the threats to the magazine and its editorial team were real. When we spoke with the editor under an alias at that time, the words in the light of today's horrific attack are somewhat haunting.
We came to know that several blogs and Facebook pages, they are demanding our death penalty and all, they are demanding our death. And several extremist outfits are probably active behind this, and we are very worried about our safety outside our home. My social life has been totally devastated. Suddenly, all friends came to know about my identity. And I don't know what will happen if any one of them leak my photo over internet and saying them that this is the editor of Root Barn and kill him and all that thing, you know. It's a strange and awkward situation because it's a crime in Bangladesh and I cannot ask the help from police. So,
how have your friends reacted now that they know?
A few of them were kind of okay with it. Not that all of them came after me, but then the wider group from my friends, they are actually not that much comfortable with my identity, and they think it's disgusting. Being homosexual is disgusting, and it's not a very comfortable situation for them to accept that one of their friends is homosexual, actually.
And what about your family? Have they also found out through the media attention?
Okay, I haven't been so far came out to my family. And to my mother, the love between two men is a very alienated concept. And she doesn't know about my orientation yet.
Have you received many messages of support from the LGBT community and also from the wider community?
Yeah, oh, definitely. From LGBT community, there are we have few of our friends. There is like Boys of Bangladesh and many few of other organizations. Root Barn have friends from LGBT community, and they are absolutely supporting us. Most of them are supporting us. Few of them are actually not okay with the media attention that the LGBT word, you know, got, and few of them are not so okay with Ruban and all. Like, they think it's unnecessary. And the wider community, they are also very, many of them are very supportive. Many. We have many friends from different organizations and human rights organizations. So they are kind of supportive, and law enforcing agencies.
There was a quote last year from a member of Boys of Bangladesh saying, still advocating for rights, but saying that the Bangladesh LGBT community lacks initiative to push for its own rights. Do you think that is true?
Yeah, that is kind of true. And then you have to, like, consider the, you know, consider our social reality, the reality that we exist in. We never go to them, you know, we the people from our community, we never go to them. We never go to even our family, or we never go to even our friends to tell them that, look, I'm homosexual and I'm absolutely a very normal person. I eat, I sleep, I die, and I love, and I do sex. So, like, this is what you guys do as well. This is very normal. This was actually one of the main targets of Ruban. It was absolutely one of our main aims, to tell our version that what is being homosexual in our society. You know, don't tag others homophobic. Rather, just go to them and tell them your stories. They might be accepting you in that you never could imagine in a way. So definitely, it's better to talk with person rather than being just, you know, closeted and all. Like, to talk with government or any other interested groups, as we believe that dialogues lead to peaceful coexistence.
Has there been political comment about the launch of the magazine?
No. There has been so far no political comment from any of the political parties.
Your regional neighbour, India, recently reinstated Section 377 laws, which are the part of the penal code in Bangladesh and in India, which criminalise homosexuality. Do you think that's had any sort of impact on the debate in Bangladesh?
Definitely. We have huge influence of India. We often refer India as our idol. Definitely, when it was, they decriminalized the 377 in Indian Penal Code, that time it was not taken as an example. But now, I think definitely it's going to be taken as an example that, oh, look, that India even, like, you know, criminalized homosexuality. So they even, like, Hindus even call it a sin. So definitely Muslim has to, like, a country like Bangladesh has to criminalize it. The recent development in India will have a very deep impact in our country, for sure, or in our Bangladesh Penal Code. It will impact our laws as well.
Just finally, do you consider yourself brave?
No, I don't think so. I'm not brave. I'm literally scared. I consider myself a very regular human being. I do have fears, and I'm right now not in a very comfortable box. But at the same time, we believe that being closeted is not the solution. The most important thing that I want to tell, that it's a belief in my heart that though it's a criminal offense in Bangladesh, I believe I'm not doing anything wrong. I believe I'm not doing any crime. Just speaking about my heart, just to tell what I feel, is it shouldn't be considered as a sin. It shouldn't be considered as a criminal offense. So I'm not brave, but at the same time, I'm not a coward.
We very much admire your courage in bringing this to light in Bangladesh, and we wish you every best wish with Ruban the magazine.
Thank you very much.
That was Sasha, who we interviewed in 2014, one of the three editors of Ruban magazine.
So Sasha was an alias to protect his identity at the time.
And lining up the interview was quite complicated. Chris, our colleague, made contact with Ruban, and then there was a back and forth period for a couple of months before we could actually have the interview, because the people we were speaking to had to move addresses because their address had become publicly known. When we did have the interview, after it was conducted, we had to sit on it for a while as well. So
we have got more on this big story out of Bangladesh today. You're on Worldwide Wave.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Tara from the Fiji Women's Rights Movement on the Worldwide Wave.
And a few more messages. What a sad and poignant question. Life takes many unexpected turns. Thank you for playing that interview. And we must never take for granted how lucky we are as Australians to live in a country where we have laws that protect us from these nasty crimes. Bless his soul. And one more from Christine, who is one of the voices you heard on that interview, former team member here at World Wide Wave, sent a message from Canberra expressing her shock at this crime that has been portrayed today.
We're now going to hear from Douglas. Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation is a not-for-profit organisation committed to promoting and protecting the human rights of lesbians, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex people across the Asia and Pacific region. They work directly with local activists to enhance their capacity to combat prejudice and change discrimination in laws and help them on the road to equality. We asked Douglas from Kaleidoscope to tell us about the link, their links with Rutban and Zulhas in particular.
I really don't want to overstate this because I've never met Zulhas personally, but you may know that Kaleidoscope annually produces a report called Speaking Out, where we present a report in each country in the Asia-Pacific that has anti-sodomy laws, those that are in the Commonwealth. Now, as part of that, we always try and work with activists on the ground. And the activist that I worked with in writing the Bangladesh chapter was Zulhas, and he supplied the testimony for that. And I found him absolutely delightful and enjoyed working with him and then interacting with him on Facebook afterwards. So although he's not been a physical friend, someone that I know personally, he's been a very useful contact for me in that capacity and for Kaleidoscope in terms of having someone on the ground there that can tell us it as it is in the country.
Tell us what you remember or what you know about Zulhas as a person. Do you think he was a dynamic person for the situation there in Bangladesh?
So what you find when you deal with a lot of the activists in countries where it's completely illegal and where there might be a high degree of public homophobia is there is quite a lot of secrecy and quite a lot of reluctance to be a named person that outside bodies can go to. And one of the things I found with Zulhas is he was a lot less secretive and a lot more open to working with a number of different bodies externally. Now, there's been a lot of chat on social media today and in various other sources that told me a couple of things that I didn't know about Zulhas. Basically, there used to be a networking site, a gay networking site in Bangladesh called Boys of Bangladesh, where most of the people who were on it used pseudonyms and avatars. Well, back in 1998, Zulhas was the first person on that to use his own picture and his own name.
Wow.
And this has been a very, very brave thing to do. And right the way through his life since then, he's taken all those brave things to the next step. And part of it is he's been backed right the way by his employer, which he worked for the U.S. Embassy for USAID. And USAID provided part of the funding to set up Rutban, which is the LGBT magazine that he produced. The U.S. Embassy, in conjunction with a number of other embassies, which I think included Europeans and perhaps the Canadian Embassy.
And, in fact, the U.S. ambassador has spoken out against this attack just today.
Absolutely, and it's been escalated even further than that. John Kerry, the Secretary of State, has given a statement and demanded that the Bangladesh government take action over this.
Because it seems to be a bit of a rash of attacks that are either being claimed or being attributed to Islamist militants and where they are attacking people who, I guess, have a more liberal view of what Bangladesh might be.
Yeah. So one of the things to make clear is this is not part of a bigger anti-gay campaign. This is a campaign against secularists, against people who have religions other than Sunni Islam, and also against atheists. So the editor of Rutban, Zulhas, has been attacked as someone who stands up for a secularist view of morality. Now, Islamic State in Bangladesh have claimed responsibility for this, but the Bangladesh government came back saying that was false and that Islamic State was not involved in it. But to date, they have not gone public on who they think has been involved in it. And because it's been going on for several months, there is a strong suspicion by a lot of people that they have not actively sought to shut down whoever it is doing this.
Tell us what you think this will mean for, I guess, Rootbarn as a publication and a source of information for the LGBT community in Bangladesh, and I guess the broader LGBT community, how this might impact what gay and lesbian people do in Bangladesh.
So there are three things to say here. Basically, Bangladesh, quite distinctly from most countries with mass Muslim populations, is actually a secularist country and has a secularist legal system. So in many ways, it was, if you like, one of the few Muslim-dominated countries that really looked as if it was going to be moving forward in terms of LGBT rights. Now, the other key thing here is the backing of the US Embassy and now the Secretary of State as well, that they see it as very important to support people like Zulhas and publications like Rootbarn within Bangladesh. Now, taken from the other side, though, the Bangladesh government has not openly supported Rootbarn, but neither have they expressed any disapproval in it. However, since 2014, Rootbarn has backed a public pride event that takes place on 14th of April every year, which is the start of the Bangladeshi New Year. So it happened in 2014, happened in 2015, and in this year it was shut down. They were told they were not allowed to go forward because of security concerns. Obviously, with the killing now, those security concerns probably were real. But as part of the shutting down of the Pride event, four people who were involved in the committee were arrested, and the government, on their release, contacted all their families to tell the families that they were homosexuals. So the actions of the government in Bangladesh have not been entirely sympathetic to Rootbarn or the cause of the LGBT activists in Bangladesh. The fact that John Kerry has given a statement today and the US Embassy is backing completely the actions of Zulhas and of the editorial committee of Rootbarn, I think is critically important here.
That's Douglas Pretzel from Kaleidoscope Australia speaking about the international pressure mounting on the Bangladeshi government following today's murder of the editor of the LGBT magazine, Rootbarn.
We have the quote from the US ambassador to Bangladesh, which was mentioned in the interview. "We abhor this senseless act of violence and urge the government of Bangladesh in the strongest terms to apprehend the criminals behind these murders."
So that was the US ambassador?
Yes.
And it was also mentioned there that it went higher up the chain with US Secretary of State John Kerry also speaking out, calling it a barbaric murder.
And there was a statement by the State Department that it was the act is simply beyond words, unjustifiable and inexcusable.
It will be interesting to see where this goes in terms of international pressure. So it's one thing to, I guess, get the coverage, but when you've got a big hitter like John Kerry standing in front of a podium and a huge bank of stations, that will be challenging for the government. It's very hard for them to avoid a response.
If you want to, I mean, the international community has been well aware of this for some time, and if you do a Google search for murders of atheist bloggers in Bangladesh, you'll get quite a few hits coming up. It's been not uncommon for the last few years for it to be happening. The attacks are usually with machetes or other bladed weapons. They do get ambushed at home, which is where many of them work, from home. Even having a simple blog is enough to rile people up. So
it's important to note that it's not, from everything we've seen, is not a homophobic attack. It's an anti-Islam attack.
Well, it's more precise than that. Sorry.
It's an anti-atheism attack. Atheists in particular are on their hit list.
Well, it's more of a... Because certain groups of Muslims have also been attacked. So it's not just Islam. It's a certain sect of Islam that is
more extreme. I guess the point I'm making, whilst there are these series of attacks going on in Bangladesh, they're not directly targeting gays and lesbians. It's more about your religious belief or lack thereof that is drawing the attention of these very radical and violent groups.
It's any free thinker, basically.
With apostates at the top of the list.
I did like when we heard from Sasha earlier on, their philosophy was about peaceful coexistence, about tell them your story. So very much encouraging that very personal approach to, hey, you know me, yeah, I'm gay, that's only a part of the story, which is a nice way to progress things, not necessarily going ahead in the right way.
I'd just like to add that the US ambassador to Bangladesh actually referred to Sulan as her dear friend. So she actually knew the person and was very touched by that.
It speaks volumes. Tonight we are in Bangladesh looking at the murder of the editor of the LGBT magazine, Rupan.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, I'm Bisi Alimi and I'm fighting for LGBT rights of people in Nigeria. It's great to know we have friends and supporters like you at Joy 94.9.
Douglas Pretzel from Kaleidoscope Australia mentioned that today's shocking events in the Bangladesh capital have reached as far as the US Secretary of State, John Kerry. We asked Douglas if he felt the international spotlight might in fact bring some good from this horrid murder.
Yeah, I think sometimes when these things happen, you know, when you hear about an activist dying, it creates a flurry of content in the gay press, but it's hardly noticed on the ground in the country. I think what's important as a distinction here is that the U.S. Embassy, as his employer, went out very bullishly as soon as the news was revealed to say that they were utterly dismayed and calling on the Bangladeshi government to act. That's a very strong position for an embassy to take, and when the press briefing of the Secretary of State that same day demands that Bangladesh take action, it becomes a diplomatic issue between the USA as one of the principal sponsors of the development of Bangladesh and Bangladesh.
From a local perspective, though, you would have to think that a young person who is not quite sure about their sexuality and thinking about coming out would have to be having second thoughts based on a crime like this.
Very much so. And obviously it's early days, but it may have an impact on the number of people who are willing to be involved in, for example, pride events or the running of Rupban or of the various lesbian, bisexual, gay and other groups within the country.
Douglas Pretzel from Kaleidoscope Australia, thanks for joining us today on World Wide Wave.
Thank you very much.
That international pressure and its ability to influence, do we think that will make some changes?
Well, we were talking earlier off-air about Bangladesh's industry. So clothes are made in Bangladesh, so if you wanted to send a signal, but the problem is you don't want to have a negative impact on people who have nothing to do with what are essentially, as we said earlier, horrid murders.
Sanctions are never particularly useful because they hit the population, not the people in charge.
Well, that's a question that's coming on SMS, actually. Is it sensible to boycott at this stage, or will that damage relations? I guess it depends on how the government responds, or perhaps if they don't respond, as to whether further, given that it is a diplomatic issue now, it has been raised to high levels, whether there's... And Douglas's comments there, USA sponsors development in Bangladesh, so they have a button to push if they want to push it.
Well, the guy that died actually was working for them. He is part of the US aid.
Exactly.
And that's the issue with the Bangladeshi government. They've been not exactly quick on the uptake when it comes to previous murders of atheist bloggers. So I think there's a certain amount of, I don't know, I wouldn't say they're in bed with the murderers, but they're not as...
They don't want to be seen to be, I guess, that might risk their, you know, conservative base if they're seen to be supporting a minority.
Because there are people that support this activity and they don't want to, yeah, they don't want to get them offside.
Their politicians may also be scared. I mean, they're people too. If this is happening to quite high-profile people and they speak out...
Yeah, that's definitely possible.
Well, bloggers are high-profile, but they don't have very much money, so they tend to be, you know, living in tiny apartments, working from home. I don't think politicians have anything to fear, but except and being, you know, potentially voted out at the next election.
If you're a blogger, you can also, you know, anonymity is quite a beneficial tool in this case. You can have a completely different persona online.
Problem is, it's not 100% guaranteed, so they've been able to unmask people, figure out what their pseudonyms represent, and then track them down at home.
The other thing I was thinking about was that the reaction, yes, there is this personal connection with the US Embassy, which has, I guess, raised this and raised it very quickly, but the Obama administration has a history and I think will leave a legacy of supporting minorities and particularly LGBT groups in countries where there is no support. It's been a real consistent approach by the use of the State Department to influence foreign relations there.
Well, he's introduced the Mr. Berry as the advocate for LGBTI people in relation to aid.
That's right. We've spoken to him here on World Wide Wave, which is a podcast you can find on the website as well. Tonight has been a bit of a heavy show, but it's a heavy issue. We tried to put in some upbeat music there, and
we have
right by the side of the LGBT community in Bangladesh. And I think that would be one of the messages, in fact, that we would hope that there is strength and courage that Root Barn continues and that the LGBT community can, out of this horrible crime, can find its voice and stand up for its own rights in its own country with the backing of, you know, friends around the world.
Well, I hope there's some Bangladeshis actually listening in to Joy on our streaming service.
Hello, if you are, and we are standing by your side. You're on World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, this is Patrick Smith, International Mr. Leather on World Wide Wave.
It's been a fascinating show, a bit of a troublesome one, but I guess that's the reality of being an activist in a country that is not necessarily accepting of what you have to say.
Important and necessary.
Sorry, I was going to say it definitely hasn't been one of our lighter shows, this one.
It hasn't. A few shout-outs, though, because we've just had a new membership come in. Thank you, Will from South Melton. Welcome aboard. Welcome to the Joy family. You are a part of a very exclusive family because there are only three full-time LGBT radio stations in the world, and Melbourne is host of one of those. So welcome aboard.
Now, we've also had Helen on the show.
Helen Melbourne, yes, Melbourne. Is the Arab group here in Melbourne.
That's it. Now, that was a fascinating show, and that was also a bit of a grim and depressing one, talking about life in an Egyptian prison and things like that and how traumatic it was.
A big thank you tonight to Douglas Pretzel for speaking to us this afternoon about today's problems in Bangladesh. You can find out more about the work of Kaleidoscope at kaleidoscopeaustralia.com, and we send our best wishes to the team at Root Barn, who have lost a very valued soul.
Thank you to everyone who interacted with us on our Facebook page during the last week. That's Matt, Pete, Roshan, Malcolm. That's W3Joy on Facebook.
Next week, we are off to Hong Kong, where we are talking about the rise of LGBTI film and storytelling in Asia. So definitely more upbeat, a different take on getting your message out. Thanks for joining us. We will catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.